the dark, I play my dream.
Welcome to episode 477 of the Permaculture Pimpcast, where PIMP stands for Permaculture is My Passion, the only pimpcast on this earth that discusses permaculture, preparedness, practical living, and sometimes prostitutes. Oh, well, I'm really excited for this one, y'all. And of course, this isn't one we can do exactly live on YouTube because I have one of those firebrands on today, y'all. She's my favorite doctor. I tell her that every time I get to speak to her. And she's my favorite doctor in the world because she does not fit anybody's paradigm. She marches to her own drum, and she is an absolute winner in my view. But before we get hopping and popping here, y'all, remember Sovereign Health Summit. That's going to be October 27th through the 31st. TPC, Tango Papa Charlie will get you 5% off over there. They're already heavily discounted, folks. We're wanting to get you the information, not make a trillion bucks. EMF rocks. I use them all the time, especially in my bed. 10% off with promo code PERMA. And if you want some of these ballin' blue light blockers that I got on right now, you can get them over at Bond Charge. Everybody's asking for it. Got a link for that down below, and they will give you 15% off. Okay, y'all, I don't have a whole lot of time with my guest because she's got to get hopping and popping and go off to another event that she's got going here, going at 100 miles an hour. But, y'all, it's Dr. Lee Merritt, and like I said, she's my favorite doctor on this earth because she doesn't just, I mean, she can talk medicine up one side and down the other, but, folks, I had a conversation with her the other day that knocked my stuff into my watch pocket. She knows some stuff that will absolutely put you back on your heels, and it is such a joy to have my favorite doctor on here. Dr. Merritt, how you doing?
Hey, thanks for having me. I love telling my friends that I'm going on the PIMPcast, and I said, no, he's a farmer. He doesn't control hookers. That stands for permaculture is my passion.
Well, I got to tell you, before we get on here, you might have actually helped me from some. I can't believe I didn't even tell you this before. Check this out. I watched a video of yours before, and we're not allowed to say chlorine, and we can't say the last part, otherwise YouTube will blow us up. But anyway, you did a whole little thing on chlorine and the word. It's like Voldemort. I can't say the rest of it.
Right.
Anyway, I went to a place near Asheville, went to a restaurant with friends, and I ate something that was called, and I quote, fish. And I screwed up because when they don't tell you what kind of fish it is, there's no telling what you're eating. Anyway, I ate this stuff. I came back, went to sleep, woke up at, I don't know, it may have been 1 or 2 in the morning, and I am shaking like a leaf. I couldn't even talk. I pushed my wife, and I'm like, and she's like, what is wrong with you? I get up, and all I can say is chlorine. I mean, I barely got it out of my mouth.
TD.
And so she went out in the kitchen. I think she added 3 drops or 5 drops of each. It may have been 10. I don't know what it was. But I'm telling you what, that food poisoning I got from that lousy fish, I have told everybody from the mountaintops inside of 20 minutes, completely gone.
Yeah.
And if I hadn't listened to you discuss that episode, I probably would have gone to the emergency room. There's no telling what would have happened there. So I got to think of that right off the bat, Dr. Merritt.
Well, thanks. Yeah, you know, I was invited actually down to Florida a couple years ago, and I'd been talking about, it's going to be hard not to say it. I'm going to call it CD because I always use the full term, but I'm not on YouTube for a reason. I've never even tried because when I go on to YouTube, I mean, when I've been on other people's shows, they've gotten knocked off of YouTube. One guy, a radio show, and now you. I'm sorry about that. It's a problem. But in any case, I was asked to go down to the Weston A. Price Foundation. I love those guys. You know, they're the world real food for real people. And they asked me to come talk on that subject. And I'm thinking, well, you know, Mark Grennan is down there. Why don't, you know, he was still in jail at the time over this. So that's why I finally realized as I was flying down there that I'm probably the only person they could find, because this is my first time asking, and they had me back last year, but they asked to speak with them, but they probably couldn't find anybody that was willing to talk about it because they didn't want to get popped by the feds. But that's really, it's an unbelievable story, because people have to realize it's the universal antidote. The only thing it can't really get rid of is fluoride. It's because fluoride is a real super electron grabber. And this works not at the level of biology, but at the level of physics. It works by stealing back. All disease takes your electrons. Essentially, we are electromagnetic beings, and that's what is happening here. So when you have a parasite or a bad bacteria or whatever it is that's making you sick, or food poisoning, what's happened is something in there, in food poisoning, it's often a bacterial toxin or the bacteria itself, and it takes the electrons out of the good guys in your system and out of your system, and then you get sick. That's what arsenic does, the same thing. Cyanide does it very well, stops your electromagnetic processes. So it's all electromagnetic. And it can be used for many things. So while they're putting the Grennans in prison for using it on in a charitable church, I mean, they were running a mission, they had been using it. That's what they decontaminated the Murray building, I think, the Senate building after the anthrax thing after 9/11. That's what they did for the FEMA did down in New Orleans after Katrina. They gassed these buildings with chlorine blank, and the problem went away. And Niagara Falls has used it in their water supply for treatment for years. And if you want to know what the big guys do that run this show, Brussels, the EU head, they don't use standard toxic stuff, chlorine in their water. They use this. They do it with that. They don't have 5G. What are they telling us? You know, so when people's water treatment plants in your cities and towns, it doesn't get rid of everything. People need to realize, I don't think it's cyclospora. There's some other parasite that's highly associated with cancer. And Dr. Amin, who's a parasitologist, they looked at water supplies in the home, and they found that in 27% of people in their kitchen sink that had already been through the city filtration system and their own filtration, whatever they had, had this parasite still in it when they came out the drinking water. But that shows you that what they're putting in your standard decontamination in the cities is not, or towns, is not really doing as well as you think, and it's toxic. The form of chlorine that they use in most swimming pools and most water treatment places, when it gets into a city sewer, for example, it converts into chloroform, is one of the things, like chloroform, like the, wow, the, you know, putting you to sleep with, yeah, and killing you. And that's why your kids' eyes smarten and get red and hot when they go into the swimming pool in the summer, the city pools. You don't need it to be that way. You know, you can't use the chlorine that we use in our city treatment, right? They don't use that in aquariums. They don't use that in commercial fish hatcheries. Why? Because it would kill the fish, right? They're just using it on you and me. But they know. So what do they use in those things? They use the thing we can't say on YouTube, in those fish hatcheries, in for aquaculture, for, you know, high end, you know, all aquariums, essentially. You don't want to use the other. So you don't want to use chlorine. It's amazing. And so they've known this. This thing has been around since the 1800s. And it went into the Niagara City water supply. They started using it because why them? They had a problem with some kind of hydrocarbon, you know, I don't know, something from industry or something got in the water. And to get it out, they used this. And they liked the taste of the water so much and how nice the water was that they'd left it in ever since. So, and by the way, it's been approved for use in mouthwashes, I think in toothpaste, in all sorts of different things. The government knows it's okay. They just want to stomp on us and for using it, because guess what? It can save you from a lot of need of pharmaceuticals to get well from things that you don't have to go down with.
Sure, it's curious that NASA called it the universal antidote, as you said. It's amazing that this thing has so many incredible uses, and a lot of which, I mean, we give it to our animals every single day, right, whether it's our pets or whether it's our sheep, it's chickens. It's in their water. I mean, we see vitality. In fact, there are other, you know, the idea that I'd gotten it from was a guy named Greg Judy, who's considered one of the best grazers in the world, had been using it for years in his cattle troughs and stuff, and had no idea the benefit of why. I mean, that's part of why his cattle do so much better than everybody else. He just thought it was keeping down the algae. Turns out it just happened to be an awesome, incredible medicinal quality as well. So, yeah, the medical rebel herself, y'all. I mean, here it is right out of the gates talking about stuff that, of course, is not allowed on YouTube, but that's why we're on our alternative YouTube channel. But that's okay, because our biggest platform is definitely the audio.
You know, YouTube, now that we've, I mean, some of us knew about the whole issue with Fauci and all these lies. It's not, Fauci's just a front man. He's not the really bad guy that did all this. But the we knew about this a long time ago. So, but it's coming out now. They want to have a big congressional, you know, review and make it look like they really care and are doing something. But it, now at least a lot of people are hearing it. And it's not just the few of us speaking in the back rooms on these podcasts about what really happened in COVID. So now they're hearing the lies that we told you about 4 years ago. At some point, when's YouTube going to wake up? When's the censorship going to stop? Because they're now complicit. I mean, I shouldn't say this too loudly. I don't want you to get bumped off. But
no, go ahead.
Anybody that's not paying attention and is continuing down this road is complicit in the unnecessary death and destruction of your family, okay, your kids, you, everybody, and your animals. They're trying to come after our agriculture and us. And this is not acceptable anymore. You know, we always gave medicine a pass. Like, my favorite one is vitamin D, because I'm an orthopedic surgeon, you know, from the 1980s, when I took my board certification review thing, they knew you had to take like 5,000 to 10,000 international units a day to maintain your bone health throughout your life. You know, like rickets, the disease that we thought went away with putting 400 international units in milk. It does stop maybe childhood overt rickets, where you have the bowing of the legs, but it does not stop adult rickets, which is abnormal bone. It's not just osteoporosis, where the bone's normal, but you don't have enough of it. It's like you have soft bone, so it doesn't heal right. You have a lot of, you know, soft fractures. It's not like you crack, you just kind of slump into the bone. So to get that, you need about 10,000 international units a day. I've taken that all my life since I realized that. But here we have the Institute of Medicine and the CDC and everybody still talking about 400, 600 international units a day. That can't be by accident, especially when you see, like, there was a hospital in Indonesia during COVID. And it, can we say COVID?
Sure. Hey, you can say anything you want.
I'm just jacking a YouTube. But anyway, so during COVID, there was a hospital that looked at, they had like 800 patients that had come and gone with, you know, or it's an 800 bed hospital, and they had lots of patients going in with COVID, and they looked at, why are some people going to the ICU or dying, but the vast majority are not. They're coming in, doing a few days, and going home. Keep in mind, they didn't get the remdesivir at that hospital, because the gall shot got shipped to America for poisoning us. Anyway, it turned out they looked at all sorts of things. They did all sorts of blood studies on people and all sorts of tests. And the only thing, the biggest thing they could figure out, not the only thing, but the biggest thing, was vitamin D levels. If your vitamin D level was over 30, which is very, very low, I want mine to be 80 to 100, way above what they think is normal. If you're over 30, your chance was less than 5% of going to the ICU or dying. That's a big change in the odds, 95% in your favor, if you just take adequate vitamin D. And yet here we have our government officials still telling us, oh, just makes expensive urine. You take 400 international units a day. You know, I'm just here to tell everybody, I think I figured out why we can't reform medicine. It's not because of, you can reform people who want to do the right thing and have the wrong idea. That's when you reform things. These guys are not that. This is not by mistake. This is not by ignorance. You cannot possibly explain this on ignorance. you know, they used to always make fun of us in orthopedics. Now they didn't later in life because it got to be so competitive to get into ortho. But in the 40s and 50s, when we were dealing with rickets and figuring out how this all worked, they used to joke that, you know, orthopods were kind of the big dumb guys of medicine. Well, where are the smart guys in medicine then? What have you guys been doing all these 50 years? You haven't improved these things. You know, they told us, don't worry about parasites. It's a third world country problem. Oh, high blood pressure is from too much salt. No, it's not. It's the other way around. These low salt diets are killing people. You can go on and on. I'm in my meeting. I think that's one of the things I'm going to say is, can we, you know, how do we reform medicine? Oh, we can't, because they cannot be accidentally wrong about this. It's programmed.
Yeah, let's absolutely get into that, because, you know, you're, this is what I love about what you do, is that there is a standard orthodoxy that everybody, I guess, is expected to follow. And it seems like in just about every way, you go the opposite way. And I love it. So that brings me to the book that you have coming up pretty soon. As I understand, it's called Escaping the Medical Matrix. And you have a conference coming up next weekend as well. Before we get into the book, though, why don't you tell us about that conference? I know it's going to be in Omaha, Nebraska, and I'm sure there's a number of people that if they can't be there live, you have a virtual option as well.
Right, we do. And I hope now, you know, the virtual thing, we have to deal with the AV guys. So I'm, you know, I'm keeping my fingers crossed, but we should be able to pull that off. They know how to do it. It just always makes me nervous when I'm not hands-on on that. But yeah, we can do that. And then it's the 21st and 22nd in August, Omaha, Nebraska. I've always wanted to have a medical meeting come there, like you're having your meeting out in North Carolina coming up. I've always wanted to have a meeting, but I could never get anybody to come. I asked people, I said, come and bring your meeting there. Omaha is a world-class city. It's a beautiful, you know, more restaurants and bars and believe it or not, golf courses and millionaires than any other city per capita in America. Who knew?
The best I've ever been to.
Yeah, it's great stuff. So great steaks, obviously. And well, anyway, so finally I just did it myself. So it's my maiden voyage on doing a conference, but I think it's going to be great. And we're going to have one of our local guys, Ben Tapper, is part of the Disinformation Dozen, the group of 12 that got thrown off, including Christiane Northrup, who's also going to come. They got told that they can't say anything on most of the channels because they were disinformation doctors. And so he's local, Ben Tapper, and he's a chiropractor. And Brian Artis is a chiropractor. He'll be there. Larry Pilevsky is going to be there. And Larry and Christiane Northrup are actually, it's not going to be just for us older farts. It's going to be for some of the younger people in the audience. How to, you know, Christiane's an OBGYN doctor, written a bunch of books, very well known. And then Larry Pilevsky is a pediatrician who was in New York City for years in a pediatric practice where he didn't give vaccines. I think it's been 20 years now because he hadn't given vaccines at the beginning of COVID. Now it's been 5 years. So I think it's 20 years now. And he said, and so they got talking on the Five Docs show that we do once a month on Sherry Tenpenny's channel. And they got talking about this stuff. And I said, you know, guys, when you come to Omaha, you need to have a conference. So we're going to do a special event where it's just them two, those two guys, and they're going to talk about how childbirth the way it should be. Because I think that's because they were talking about how these terrible things that happen when your child is born and they do this and that and the other thing. And I'm kicking myself for, quite frankly, for what I, as a physician, you know, so many of these things are so obvious. Again, this is my point about it's not reformable because they had to know this. For example, how many people realize that no vaccine since the time of Edward Jenner has ever been sterile? I just learned that. Yeah. Well, I skipped around there, back to the meeting. We still have some spots open, so you can go on themedicalrebel.com and you can read all about it, see the agenda, sign up if you want to come, and or if you want to sign on to the virtual meeting.
So. Well, I think it'll be great. I can be there virtually. Yeah, like she said, y'all, Omaha is cool. And if you got some extra time, that Omaha Zoo is probably the best one I've ever been to.
Oh, yeah. It's a fabulous zoo. They're world famous for that.
Well, also, I had no idea how awesome a food culture was up there. I remember going there, and there was that show on Food Network called Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. And my wife and I had there was a number of them right there in Omaha, and we tried to hit every last one of them, and they were best breakfast place I think I've ever been to was also in Omaha. So yeah, she's not overselling it, folks. I think it's one of those places that people just have no idea how cool it really is. Yeah, there's a lot going on.
It's been growing. I mean, we're up to 1 million people now in the metropolitan area, and you know, we've added about 100,000, I think, in the last number, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, because people realize it's a centrally located city. People are generally get along. We're friendly people out here in the Midwest, and it's not a lot of the problems that you're having in some of the other cities. So yeah, I think that's why it's growing, but it's a nice place. And you're right about the restaurants. Stella's is my favorite burger joint. That's was rated one of the top 150 burgers in America. So I'll give them a shout out. When I was doing a bodybuilding competition, my trainer and I, we would go work out together, and then we'd go over and eat a, you know, a double cheeseburger at Stella's, gluten-free bun.
But I love Stella's.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, gives me a reason to head back there. Well, I'll be there virtually, folks, and I suggest everybody check it out. That's a heck of a lineup. I wouldn't miss it, and I'm not going to miss it, because I'll be definitely getting my tickets, and we'll have a link for it down below that takes you over to Dr. Merritt's channel, or her YouTube channel, rather. Not her YouTube channel, but her podcast
channel. Website.
Yeah, your website. Guess I'm showing my age over here. I'm guessing I'll be telling everybody to go look at the smoke signals or something here before long. So,
we might need those again.
Well, you were telling me a minute before we went live here that you finally got this latest book done, and it's called Escaping the Medical Matrix. Now, I guess right off the bat, I can't imagine for this audience. I mean, when just in the title, it kind of foreshadows what I think it's going to be about. But for those that don't know, what is the medical matrix?
Well, again, it's the fact that this is not by accident that we've been doing things wrong, that we haven't paid attention to parasites, that we don't give you enough vitamin D. It's a system. It's not, you know, you can hang Fauci 10 times to Monday. Okay. You can put him in prison. You can throw stones at him. I don't care. But the point is, it's not going to make anybody healthier. The point of my book is, once you understand what got you in, it wasn't just COVID. It's been going on for thousands of years, actually, but the last 200, it really went live, the Matrix. And it's been giving you false science by false fake scientists, actually, fake people that brought this stuff out. And I show you the history here, and then I show you how they captured medicine, and then how we get out of it. Because you know, that too many people, they know there's a problem. They want to leave. They don't want to spend their time in an emergency room, like you don't either. Most people, they want to have another alternative, but they don't know what that alternative is. Fortunately, you learned about that chlorine stuff, so you took care of it. I could tell you that Carrie Made and I were at a meeting, and somebody came up to us and said, if you were on a desert island, what's the one, and you could only take one medical thing, what would you take? And we both said in unison, chlorine blow.
Really?
Yeah, we did. And so there's a lot of stuff there that what you realize is that the Matrix has been an overly confusing, crazy system created purposely for human control. I'll just say it. It's not about anybody wishing you to be healthy. It's about they love you to be controlled and to not live too long. So they have to support you in your old age with Medicare and insurance and stuff like that. I think that's really a lot of it. And there's a human sacrifice aspect of this. You know, I think that's maybe what I told you the other day, is that what really woke me up. I mean, there are a couple things that were surprising to me in the last couple of years. I didn't think I could be surprised anymore, but every time I turn over a rock, it's more surprising and more evil than I thought. For example, I mean, if my pediatrician, when my boys, I have two boys, they're grown men now, and they're, you know, they've done great, but they, you know, if when they were 5 and 6 and they were being asked by the pediatrician was saying, well, it's time for their MMR shots or whatever shots. Now, fortunately, they didn't, because they're in their 30s, they didn't get a lot of shots like they do today. But if he'd looked me in the eye and said, oh, and by the way, you know, the stuff that we're going to squirt in their arm, the shoot inject in their arm, it's not sterile, right? You know, it's not sterile. I would have looked at him like, are you that shit crazy? Are you not crazy? I'm not doing that. I'm a surgeon. I'm not going to stick non-sterile stuff in my kid's arm. What are you thinking? But nobody ever said that to us. You know, nobody ever. I mean, I didn't know it. I mean, and I've been studying a lot of things. I only confirmed this because I looked at the CDC website myself and I looked at what they tell you to do. And by the way, none of the vaccines are sterilized it's what they consider contamination and sterilization are two different things. If you're going to sterilize a vaccine so it doesn't have any kind of remnant parasites in it, for example, you'd have to heat it up to 220 degrees centigrade for 20 minutes. That's 440 degrees Fahrenheit, hot oven for 20 minutes to get. That's what we do in the operating room. We don't do it. We don't do this. But that's their excuse for putting in mercury. When I called Dr. Pulaski, Larry Pulaski, and I said, Larry, you know, this is like 8 months ago. I said, did you know that it's not just the COVID thing. None of these vaccines have ever been sterile. And he said, oh, yeah, I knew that. I said, you got to be kidding me. So that's one of the reasons I got out of the whole vaccine thing. I learned about that. You know, it's a patient taught me. That's what got me out of it. Yeah. It's just unbelievable. So the point being is that the matrix is made of this false science in a way that it's for population control, too. You know, people can think that's all conspiracy nonsense and stuff. Go read Plato. Plato, here's if your children go to Yale or Harvard or any of the, you know, liberal arts colleges in this country, they will read Plato's Republic. Okay. My joke is the only thing good about the Vietnam War and the protests was that we had this whole, that whole Kent State thing happened just towards the end of my freshman year in college. And I didn't have to do a final exam on Plato's Republic. That was the only thing that I remember about that. But I've gone back and read it now. And essentially, this is 400, 500 BC, right, that he's writing in the Socratic dialogue. And Socrates is talking to his student, and they're talking about marriage. Book 5 is all about marriage. And at some point, Socrates says, well, you know, and I'm paraphrasing because these aren't the exact words, but something like, you know, doctors in the future will have to be made of tougher stuff. They're going to be have to really toughen up and be higher quality than the doctors of today. And the student's kind of going, well, like, why would that be? And Socrates said, well, you know, today, and this is right out of the Hippocratic Oath, is that the first thing you do is give your patients a good diet. He says, anybody can give a patient a good diet. That doesn't take much. But in the future, we're going to be using medicines. And that's going to be tougher. And the medicines are going to be to help us keep the state from becoming too large or too small. This is 500 or 400 BC, right? Wow. So these guys have been the elite of this world, you know, call them what you will. I like the pagan mafia is my favorite personally, but these guys have all been fascinated with eugenics and population control. You don't have to take my word for it. You can read Quiet Weapons for Silent Wars. You can read the stuff coming out of the Bilderberg meetings. You can listen to what the Club of Rome has published about this stuff. These are the elite. It's the basis of Darwin's. And Darwin's cousin was the founder of really eugenics, Francis Galton. They were all. It's all a big science to justify control and population control. And I think that's the bottom line. That's why it can't be reformed from standard measures you might do in a company. We have got to just walk out of it. It's like my friend says, it's time to walk out of Babylon. You know, you just have to walk out of the bad system. But then you don't want to go back because now you've rearranged your pills in your cabinet, but you don't know what to do. So we don't want you to just rearrange your pills in your cabinet. We want you to rearrange your thinking. So that's the whole point of the book. And the meeting, too, really, is to try and get people to think differently about health and wellness. And the biggest thing is to not trust the science. I'm just going to say, maybe we should have that banner made. Don't trust the science. I'm too late to think about that now. But yeah, because the science has been jigged. And they, it's interesting. I've been watching this on these TV shows. They tell us on these TV shows, like, what was the name? It's called the three body problem. Yeah. And they're telling us, okay, to take these earthlings over, we're going to have to be, they're really advancing rapidly and we're getting there slowly to take over their planet. We're going to have to do something. Oh, let's give them a little false science and let's cause some of the big smart guys to commit suicide so they're not around to tell you the truth. I think they're telling us what's been going on.
Well, yeah, it's, you know, in the occult realm, it's called lesser magic. They basically have to tell you what they're going to do before they do it. Yeah. They use the media. They use a number of other things. I'm right there with you, Dr. Merritt. I'm wondering, though, if you wouldn't mind maybe going, you said this goes back, and having read Plato's Republic, you know, the Critias, the Timaeus, and the one thing, it's another case. Look at Plato's allegory of the cave. I mean, it was true 3,500 years ago, and it's true today. No. So it isn't a hard sell for me to believe that this cult of Asclepius has been going on for that long. But how do you qualify it in the book? How do you, or where of it, do we know its origins? Do we know how it started and how it morphed into what it is today?
Well, you know, and there's a lot of conflict still going around in that area. If you look at the Black Sea and the area that's Ukraine right now and that whole area, you had the Scythians, the Pythians, I think, and the Phrygians, the Lydians, it's an area that was known for its poisoning. Okay. They were famous poisoners back there. And in the area, which was ancient Anatolia, encompasses the whole of what's Turkey now. That was where a lot of these big temples of the old pagan religions were built. I mean, they were all over the world, but this was a big center for the cult of Apollo. And don't get too hung up on the names, because the gods, they changed the gods' names so you don't kind of follow them through history, but it's the same guy, you know, just repackaged. So Apollo is called Apollo. Well, let me back up. You mentioned Asclepius. So we were taught in medical school. I was at a school where we had a big history of medicine library, and it was kind of cool to listen to these guys talk about it. They told us that Asclepius was the Greek myth god of medicine. It's all just a Greek myth, you know, so kind of cute history, brotherhood kind of thing, symbols. Well, they don't tell you how real this was, but in the ancient days, Asclepius was not the god of medicine, and he's not now. He's the demigod. And the way it really worked is, just like today, we have a front man, like Fauci's a front man. You know, Soros is a front man, actually, I think. And he's probably higher up the thing than Fauci. But they're at levels. And so we don't see the real bad guys, because if we did, we'd run away. But same thing in this godhead. So Asclepius is the nice guy. That's he was the staff. That's the single staff. It's a single rod with a serpent snake wrapped around it. And that's the traditional symbol of medicine. But the real story is quite different. The real story is that Apollo was the great god of medicine, but Apollo never healed anybody. They called him Apollo the physician. I don't know I'm going to have to see what the roots of that word are, I guess, because I don't know why they would call him that, because his only two claims to fame were poisoning and plague bringing. Let's just think about that. So our symbol and his symbols are all over modern medicine today. So Apollo, it turns out, got a human woman pregnant. And this is how it comes into even 2019, 2020. We hear about coronavirus, right? Well, Apollo gets a human woman pregnant, and she tries to escape him. And he hunts her down, and he used a bow and arrow, and he kills her. And then he performs the first C-section and brings out Asclepius. That's the Greek story, right? Well, the question is, who's the mother? Well, it's this woman that tried to escape and flee. Her name is Coronis. Okay, so we didn't name the coronavirus. The coronavirus under an electron microscope doesn't look anything like a crown. That's their claim, that corona means crown, and that's why. No, look at it yourself. It looks like a blob on your windshield in a rainstorm, right? But what the point is that this is an homage to an ancient pagan religion. It has nothing to do with anything looking like a crown, but it's all over the place. Coronis Optical, Coronis Pharmaceuticals, Coronis Radiology Suite. They sell things. I mean, Apollo is the biggest chain of pharmaceutical pharmacies in the world, 5,000 stores in India. It's got cancer centers in India are called the Apollo Cancer Center. It is all over. And here's I mean, people say, well, yeah, but this is kind of like these symbols for, you know, BP oil and things. But you should look at those symbols too. But when symbols mean something, symbols matter. And so I go through this in the book about the symbols of medicine and why you should pay attention, because they're all symbols, like the wings on the caduceus. That's from the cockatrix bird. And the cockatrix bird was a bird that could kill you by spitting on you or glancing at you. Shakespeare called it the darting eye of this cockatrix. So why would you have a death bird on the on this thing? But here's the real kicker. The real kicker is when you graduate medical school. Now, these are just, this only applies to MDs, not DOs, naturopaths, any other kind of healer. But MDs, we got captured. And what happens is you go to your diploma award and after your fourth year of medical school, and you've got your diploma in hand. So theoretically, you could walk out then, but we didn't know enough to. I mean, I didn't, certainly. I mean, and I don't think anybody, I never saw anybody in my class walk out, 100 people. But then, when you're all done, you actually are, you know, you've got an MD at that point. You don't have to take the Hippocratic Oath, but we all did. We all thought it was a rite of passage, and also that it was a moral code to go by. That's what the point was. But think about what it actually says. So you all stand up, and in unison, you read this from the program, and it's like a chant. I hate to say that. When you read it, it starts out, I swear by Apollo the physician and Asclepius and Panacea and Hygieia with all the gods and goddesses as my witness. Now, we didn't think we were taking an oath. We thought it was just kind of old history, kind of cute. We're in the brotherhood, you know. No, we took an oath. And if you don't believe it, on the end of it, it says, and that I will honor this bond and this indenture, meaning You are owned by these guys. Okay. I just indentured myself to a cult of a poisoner. That is how bad it is. And so that's why you can't reform this. There was never an intent to be healers if you were in this system. This system is for control. As crazy as this may sound to people, you just can't get away without realizing this. The great uncle of Hippocrates was actually a physician poisoner. That's what he was. He's not known for curing anybody. He was one of these hereditary priests of the temples of Apollo. So when you went to those temples, you went not to ask for health. You went to, it's actually a good metaphor for medicine today. You bribe them, you pay them with some gifts or money or something. And then you ask for not being plagued, not getting a plague and not getting poisoned. So it's kind of, there might be some metaphor there. But his great uncle was a famous poisoner that poisoned the city of Kira in Greece. So Kira was and it's a religious war that it was about. So the Apolloites, or whatever they were called, the priests of the Apollo and the people, the followers of the cult of Apollo, they were also of the Delphic Oracle. That was the Delphic Oracle with the snakes all over, you know, and telling you the future and whatever all went with that. But this town of Kira practiced a different religion and didn't like this stuff that was going on with the Delphic people and the cult of Apollo. And so a war broke out, and they wanted to basically just raise this town. And they couldn't get in. It was a long-term siege. And then the greater uncle of Hippocrates found a little hole in a water supply going into the town. And he was able to put hellebore, which is a very poisonous plant. He used hellebore and put it in the water supply, and it poisoned Kira to the point that 750 years later, I think it was Plutarch, or it was an ancient historian, I thought it was Plutarch or maybe somebody else, visited the place, and it was still dead. Nothing would grow there. No one could live there. Nothing could go there 750 years later. These are the people that are the forefathers that we take an oath to. These are the forefathers of modern medicine. And as creepy as that may sound to people, why would it be true? Let me tell you the other thing about the oath of Hippocrates. We don't really know I thought Hippocrates was a real guy, but and Aristotle talks about him as a real guy. Plato talks about him as a real guy. So I thought he was real. But what's interesting is we don't have an original. It didn't get carved in stone. These are not the Sumerian tablets, unfortunately. If I could make my book in Sumerian tablet form, I would do it, because I wanted to have there's about what happened in COVID. I wanted to have it on somewhere. It wouldn't get messed up along the way, because I'm seeing that that's the way they do it. Is they may have told you the truth in 1880 when they figured something out, but they slowly, if it wasn't good to the narrative, they slowly perverted it. So in textbooks of today, it reads totally different, like what cancer is, totally different from what the pathologist who found the characteristic organism, like parasite, by the way, of cancer back in the 1880s. So that got completely shifted out. But these guys, the Oath of Hippocrates too, we don't really know what it said. We have the earliest edition is from the 10th century AD. It's in the Vatican Library. And, you know, unless you read ancient Greek and couldn't have a walk on into the library, you can't get it to read it. So the oath that we take comes from a Scottish physician in the 1850s. Now, you know, for anybody that's paying attention to Tartaria and all this kind of weird history that's coming out, something happened in the early 1800s that changed the world. It seems to be around the time of whether the Napoleonic Wars are true, but there's something happened, and there's timelines wrong and missing time in the timelines. There's all sorts of stuff. So who knows what our past was? But this is the fact that the only thing that we have to go on, the earliest thing was about 1851, says to me, that may or may not be what the ancient physicians really thought. We just don't know. But what it does is it that's the guy who translated it to have a bond and indenture. And you can see the 10th century one that does do the homage to even I can read that in the Greek, because you know it's Apollo and Asclepius and stuff. So yeah. So you don't know. It's crazy. Stop.
This sounds twice as sinister now that you're bringing it up, because I'm imagining myself. I've never been through medical school. My oldest brother has. And I just remember the elation that he had having been done. And I'm sure you could absolutely relate to it. The elation that he had just being done with it after the grueling 4 years that you put up with, only to begin, you know, another grueling period of time for your residency and all the other stuff. But to take you at that time, and have you do something that, as you describe it, seems less of an oath and more of an incantation. It sounds like they're indoctrinating the next level of people, and they're counting on the fact that you're so elated that you're done with this that you may not even be thinking about the oath that you're taking. That's why it almost sounds like an incantation. Yeah. You know, when you spoke to me about it before, I was like, I'm just wondering, Dr. Merritt, with the benefit of hindsight, with what you know now, if you had it to do it all over again, clearly you wouldn't have taken that oath. But would you have gone another direction completely? I mean, you're an MD, you're a surgeon, the whole nine yards. Would you have done it differently, knowing what you know now?
Well, I don't think so, to be honest. The problem is, for the young people today, you don't know if you yourself are going to be forced to get poisoned with vaccines just to go through the training. Now, that's a different question to be asked today than I would have asked. But when I started medical school in 1976, even if I'd known some of this, because I started getting suspicious a little bit during my residency, so about 1980s, you know, that it's still in my opinion, it's just the most unbelievable learning experience in your life. But as we're finding out, and I can't remember the guy that the famous quote about that the 21st century is that we're going to know, we have to learn, unlearn, and relearn. So now we have to unlearn. But I was given a basis for understanding a lot of stuff that there's no way I could have gotten any other place. I mean, you know, some of this is highly technical, and that's what they count on. They count on the fact that they can fool us with technology, because how many people can actually read the part of the paper that goes over how they did the study? You know, that's the hard part. So, for example, this is another thing that came out during COVID that you don't hear people talking about. But when in August of 2020, so COVID started in 2019, August of 2020, when they were just getting ready to roll out the vaccines, I started saying, you know, these PCR tests, I can't, you know, we know they're not giving us the true answer, but how do they really work? And what's the skull? So I spent a couple months and I just looked at that thoroughly. One of the things I did was I discovered there were three groups of people that made the vaccine or made the PCR test. One of them was the CDC. Okay. And there was the Drosten group in Germany, and there was the Louis Pasteur Institute in France. And so when you look at them, each of them had six tests. So there were 18 tests in all. And these are short sequences of genetic sequences that are placed in this testing kit so that when they do that thing, which they don't have to, you know, we've done nasal swabs for viruses in the past. Nobody had to poke this thing way back up near your brain to do it. That's crazy. But beyond all that and the overcycling and everything else, how do these things work? Well, they theoretically, you can swab stuff and then it has a short sequence that it gets magnified. That's the cycling aspect in this machine. And then it tests against known things. And in this case, they were testing against 18 different regions of what they considered the SARS-CoV-2 virus. And what did they say? Oh, this is such a unique virus that if you test positive, you can't, there's no other reason you should have it. You had to be exposed or have the disease. That's what they told us, right? No other living thing has this, only this new virus. So there's at the NIH, they have the gene bank. And the gene bank is where people, scientists, upload genetic sequences from all sorts of things. If you think you found a new aardvark and you've sequenced him, you put that up there, and now this is aardvark, Texas, and maybe has your name on it. And somebody also gets a sequence, and they say, oh, this guy already found it, you know. So that's why it is. So it's an encyclopedia of genetic sequences. And the way you index it is called the BLAST program. So I hadn't heard anybody talking about this, but I took these 18 tests and I ran them through the BLAST program. Now, what should they have shown us? If they were really telling us the truth, every one of those tests had to come back SARS-CoV-2. If you're going to tell me that there's no false positive here and that if it tests positive, you've got it, then it can only come from one place. And that's this coronavirus that you told us about, that SARS-CoV-2. None of them came back that. 18 tests I put through the BLAST program. You just type the sequence in, you let it sit there, it cogitates a little bit, and then it spits out your result. Now, you can ask it to look for things. And of course, they claim that the sequence is in there. So you're going to ask it to look for things. But unscripted, if you just put it in, what it showed up Homo sapiens gene 5, Homo sapiens gene 12, Homo sapiens gene 8. In other words, they were testing to our own genome.
Wow.
Now, yes, that's how bad it is. So then I said, I wonder about bird flu and some of these others. So I went to the 2009, I think it was H1N1. Influenza, which is also not a virus, but anyway, they claim it's that too had tests. And so I put the sequence of the H1N1 into the BLAST program, and it too came back Homo sapiens gene 1, Homo sapiens. So now since I started talking about that, the system's changed a little bit. Maybe it was going to change anyway, but I kind of think I may have pushed them. Now they've made it a little more cagey. So if you do what I just did, you wouldn't get you'll get SARS-CoV-2, because they know that people are looking. So now you have to specify, but they can't lie to the point of not showing you all the options. So see, even the option that came back Homo sapiens, when you look at it, where did it come from in you? You could also find that out. One of them was the male testicle. So that genome that we were testing for SARS-CoV-2 actually is found in the male testicle. You know, some protein or something, and it's all over the place. You can look and see where that this sequence, where else it's found. So now you have to kind of specify what are you looking for? And if you tell them that you're looking for SARS-CoV-2, now you'll get it. But if you tell them, oh, I'm looking for Homo sapiens, you'll get Homo sapiens. If you tell them you're looking for a chicken, you know, Gallus Gallus, you'll get Gallus Gallus.
it's a
great scam.
Is there any part of this whole system that isn't absolutely corrupt? I mean, you blew my mind when you talked about the thing, Plato. And I should have already known, because honestly, if you were to just kind of sum up Plato's Republic, it's basically the government being a nanny state. That's really what it is. But I had no idea until you pointed it out. Either I'd forgotten or I never knew that the idea was, hey, we're going to need these drugs to keep the population in check.
It's not a big part of it. Yeah.
Are we seeing the culmination of that right now? I mean, are we seeing basically everything that we see unfolding right now? Is this just population reduction done without our knowledge for the most part?
I really think so. I think that's the primary mover right now. Whether they know something's coming, whether they just know that they have to, they can't, that they believe in their own, you know, BS, I don't know. But that does seem to be the overwhelming modus of their impetus, rather, is population reduction. And but the other thing is, they also love us to be afraid and confused, because if we're thinking straight, we wouldn't have fallen for a lot of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So my point in all this is that it's not just that they lied to you about the vaccine being safe and effective. They're also lying to you about so many other things to keep you confused and to make you afraid and make bad decisions. And you know, I didn't figure out. So, for example, I figured a bunch of stuff out, but I didn't figure out this one. This was Dr. David Brownstein, who's been in practice for decades, who's a I think he's internal medicine or family practice. But anyway, he figured out by looking at the actual patients, you know, like, funny thing how that works, to touch the patient, examine the patient. And by looking at their labs critically, he discovered that the problem with high blood pressure is not low salt, or it's not high salt, it's too low salt. And I went to, I just stumbled into one of his meetings. I'd heard years ago in 1980, I went to it's a perfect example of the lies. So in 1980, I was doing my internship in the Bethesda Naval Hospital in DC. And I went to an international blood pressure meeting. When I was in medical school, blood pressure wasn't the big thing it is now, right? Something's changed. And our diets haven't changed that much. So it's something has changed though. And I went to this big meeting. There were like people from all over the world. These specialists came and they gave us talks. And at the end of the meeting, I'll never forget, they had a panel where they're all sitting at this panel and they couldn't agree on at what level of blood pressure we should start treatment. They couldn't agree on what the best treatment was or what even caused things. But what they all agreed on was that low salt diet didn't matter. And yet, right after that, we started hearing about all this low-salt mm-hmm. diet. And now, food doesn't taste good. COVID, they had an excuse to take all the salt shakers away. I now carry my own Baja Gold grinder in my own. I love their taste of their salt. Yeah, it's crazy. So what's this all about? Well, so I'm listening to him to give a study. And he had a great slide. In fact, I've used it in my book. He's got it's like a big red bar of death. Okay, there's a big death bar here. And then there are a bunch of short little green or blue bars, the whole rest of the slide. And this is salt intake and then death risk from cardiovascular death or serious issue like a bad stroke or something. And he asked the audience, which side do you think the low risk is? The low salt is, and the death rate's high, the ball. So the big red bar is the big death bar. Which side is the low salt side? It was on the big red bar death side. Okay. And when he explained it was so simple. I went up to him afterwards and I said, you know, I'm not in internal medicine, so I wasn't paying attention. I didn't think about this. And I didn't see people. And he looked at patients' sodium levels and said, there's a big range. And this is what they do. See, this is how one of the tricks they play. Little things you wouldn't think are a big problem, but they are a big problem. Their range of normal is way high to way low. So on sodium, he started looking at how people did whose sodiums were in the 140 range, which is we consider normal, versus the ones that have drifted down, you know, in the low 30s and things. And he found out that they were much healthier, the guys that had the higher salt level. And then he realized what was going on. So in a nutshell, this is not hard. And this is why I said the big smart guys from Harvard and the Institute of Medicine and CDC and stuff, they have to know if they're physicians of any caliber whatsoever, because this is physiology 101 in first year medical school. So essentially, if you don't have enough salt in your body contracts, your cells don't keep water on, because water, to keep the water where it needs to be, you have to have sodium. So it contracts down, and now you don't have as much blood volume, and your blood pressure starts to drop a little bit. Well, the body knows that this is what's happening. Very precisely, it controls blood pressure, so it turns on this system to reabsorb salt, okay, and to not let the salt go out in your urine. So you start try and reabsorb salt, but if you're not eating salt, you're not getting enough salt to do that. You always lose some, so you keep drifting down more and more. And then if you get too low volume and too low blood pressure, what happens is the body turns on its emergency system, which is called the renin-angiotensin, meaning squeeze the artery system. And it's like a big sledgehammer that just beats up your arteries to try and keep your blood pressure up, but it overshoots. And then no problem, comrade, we give you a pill from pharmaceuticals. So now you've got these pills coming at you to lower blood pressure that you've created by a low salt diet. And you can't get people off these low salt diets. They're so convinced by 50 mm-hmm. years of propaganda about this that they absolutely won't listen to you. And yet there's so much evidence. I mean, if you're having cankles, those swollen ankles, try taking more salt in and see what happens. I did that. And I'm telling you, it makes a difference. I never had that in my life till I got into my 70s. And I started having a little bit of that. And I couldn't figure out why. My heart was fine. I mean, I maxed a stress test because I was a little bit worried. Maxed out a stress test at my age. I hadn't seen it. So I'm not, it was my diet and some other things. Electromagnetic, I think too. But I'm telling you it. And then I'm sitting in the back of the room when he's talking and the coup de grace, I said to myself, you know, my friends wanted to go on some kind of healthy eating kick before we all went on a cruise together. And he said, so we should take, and by the way, you have to, we should get points for things like you're supposed to drink 8.5 cups of water a day. And I said, what? Have you heard that you have to drink the new recommendations all over the internet? If you really look for it, it's all over now. They're pushing you to drink 8.5 cups of water, regardless of your exercise or your heat stress or anything. Now, what's that? And so I'm listening to Brownstein and I'm thinking about that comment. I'm in the back of his lecture thinking what he's telling me. I think, oh, my little conspiratorial mind's going. And I'm thinking these guys in a smoky back room of pharma saying, how can we give these people high blood pressure and the doctors don't figure it out, you know? And this is how. So they give you not only the low salt, which causes your emergency system to go on, now they're going to give you more water. And what's that going to do? It's going to wash out the salt that you've got. I couldn't believe it. I told him that afterwards. I went up to him. I said, oh my gosh. So I do have on my Rumble channel, I have a big discussion with Dr. Brownstein about that. I mean, and that's one that you don't have to be a the smartest guy in the block in medical school to figure out if you were told that was going on. But if, you know, I wasn't aware of what was going on. And now I am. And it was funny. You said that I usually am 180 degrees out of what in mainstream medicine is. So I got my labs back not too long ago and I sent them to my surgeon's son. I said, what do you think? I just emailed him and said, you know, and he said, damn, mom, you're totally euboxic, meaning you're just perfect. You're right in the middle of everything. I said, and he said, you must know something that the average patient doesn't. And I said, yeah, you're right, kid. I don't take government advice for any medical problems and I haven't for 50 years.
There you go. Well, Dr. Merritt, I know you have, you have a celebration though, 10, because you finally got rid of your book and you have somewhere to be. You got to go out. Wish I could hang out with you, before too long. Man, I got so many things I want to ask you. You brought up Dr. Amen. I was just talking about him to my wife a little while ago and about the whole parasite thing and the work he's done and how I'm doing this protocol right now, actually. I just started it yesterday, as a matter of fact, and you just happened to bring him up. But we'll definitely have to have you back in the future, especially when this book goes hot, because I think we're only touching the surface. Well, yeah. I know that we are, because I got a list of 30 questions here and I only got
well, I'm sorry, and I blabbed on about the
No, I mean, just the best thing to do when interviewing you is just ask you the question and you're going to rock it out and you're going to take it in directions I never even imagined. So, Dr. Merritt, one more time. I know you got this, got the Escaping the Medical Matrix conference. That's going to be October 21st and the 22nd. That's going to be in downtown Omaha, Nebraska. Go to the medicalrebel.com. Go get your tickets over there, folks. Even if you're going to do them like I have to, get them virtually, go over there, because I guarantee they're going to be dropping some serious, serious info. And then also, Dr. Merritt's going to be with us at the Sovereign Health Summit in October 27th through the 31st. And no matter what, y'all, you got to get this stuff, because we're living in a world that is becoming, it's gotten to the point now where it's hard to even figure out what's true anymore. So anything else, Dr. Merritt? I know you got to get hopping here.
No, I always enjoy coming on, and I can't wait to see you. So.
All right. Well, that goes double for me. Matt over there, Cultivate Elevate, I told him you were coming. So now he's like, yeah, I'm definitely going. So,
oh, great. Yeah. He's one of my favorites too. You guys, this is going to be great. And we should take him on our little investigative journey we're going to do.
Oh yeah. I think that would be,
he's a fellow traveler on that stuff about learning about, because, you know, he clued me into, uranium glass. Mm-hmm. And now it's coming out that radium, for example, you know, this whole issue with radon in your basement and all that kind of stuff. The guy who came up with that has turned his fans off. I knew this years ago at the Doctors for Disaster Preparedness. He realized he was wrong. The whole idea of radiation, the way we think of it, is not right either. So hang on.
Well, it's funny because you bring that up, because I had a guy tell me that his vegetables are keeping three times longer since using that glass. And he's going to farmer's market, you know, different places to go get it, that everything stays fresher longer. So we got so much to talk about next time. Look, y'all, I don't want to hold Dr. Merritt any longer. I know she is going at 100 miles an hour. I want to thank everybody for checking us out. You know, hey, get over there, check her out every possible way you can, because like I said, we only scratch the surface. You know the deal, y'all. Until next time, stay alert, stay alive. I'm grooving with the truth, truth, truth. Feeling anxious, truth, truth, truth. We've got the answer, all we need to do. Listen to the earth, they got us through. Let's see the machine, watch the world spin. From the smallest sprout, to the harmony begin. In the cycle of life, where the magic's alive.